Hello, my beautifuls. Welcome to Titular Characters. I am your adorable host, Eva Webb, and in this issue, we're featuring Mark London. Mark's central focus is to provide a compelling experience through action-driven storytelling and immense world-building. His goal is to give readers more than just a comic, and London achieves just that. And what he's not telling you in that incredibly humble bio is that he's the CEO of Mad Cave Studios, a company that continues to crank out some of the best content in the industry. And he's here today, ready to talk about comics. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
What does the CEO of Mad Cave do?
It's kind of like your orchestra director, where you basically just have to like wiggle a little wand around and get all everyone just aligned and have everybody in perfect symphony and harmony and sounding great. So that's basically what you have to do. You have to try to like organize the team, make sure that everything's running spot on.
Nice. And it's not just one team. It's multiples of teams.
Yes, it's multiple teams because you have your designers who deal with all the logos on the books, the dress books, how they format the books so that everything is it's great once you have to send it to print, whether it just be that you want them physical or you want them digital. So they have different formats. Also, when you have you also have your marketing team. So depending on your strategy, your books, your campaign, your budgets, your sales department, which also deals with comic book shops, deals with shippings, all the logistics behind everything. Also, we have our own website, so we also sell through there. So we have to make, we're making daily shipments from people that buy through the website. You have the publisher who deals with the printing company and with the distributors, making sure that your books are solicited, they appear in their catalogs on time, that you give them your release dates. You also have your PR department, making sure that you get your reviews from different books, that you get mentions here and there in the different media outlets. So, and also on top of that, creating the stories, coming out with a concept, and dealing with artists and writers and colorists and letters from time to time. So, yeah, it's a big gig, but fun.
That is a lot of cats to herd, though. I mean, if you don't mind me saying so.
Yeah, definitely. That's an excellent way to put it.
So, what's your favorite part of the job, you think?
I think that starting the conversation of exactly everything that we're doing, and afterwards, when you start seeing like all the pieces falling in place, and you still have that little creative idea came out from just an idea, and then you start actually seeing take shape and form until it actually goes to your printer, and you see it on the stands. I think that whole journey is probably the favorite part of my job.
So, sort of along those lines, where do great ideas come from at Mad Cave? And how do you recognize them?
I think that you have to keep an eye on what's out there. And there's been this huge debate always on like, oh, you're supposed to be creating stuff that you like, just write for yourself. And that is true. That is something that you have to follow your passion. But also you have to keep an eye on what people are into, what things are working, what they don't work, and why they don't work. And I guess that we sit at a round table and basically just start spitting ideas of things that are either dear to my heart or I think that they would work or translate well into the comic book medium. And it's from there, it's a conversation with my publisher and my editor-in-chief, Christopher Fernandez and Chris Sanchez. And basically just putting ideas out there from things that I love, things that I grew up with. Yeah.
That's amazing. It just sounds like so much fun, just in general.
It is. It is. The problem sometimes is when you have like just a scene or a cool concept, but then you want to like try to flesh it out and then you hit a wall every single time because it's not working. It's not going anywhere. So then it becomes a little bit frustrating. But then I like to go back to the drawing board and be like, okay, but how can we really make this work? Why should people care about this? Why could this be a high concept for people to actually enjoy? What themes are you working with? What genres are you diving into? And it basically just starts taking shape from there.
So does production time matter when you're thinking about what people are into? Like, you know, it takes anywhere between, I don't know, say anywhere between 3 months and 6 years to do a book, theoretically, as a norm in the industry. Mm-hmm. Are there ever times where you just feel like, oh boy, I really have to hit this while the iron's hot? And how do you do it?
It's hard. It's hard to balance those type of things because really, as you were saying, you have no idea how long sometimes a project is going to take. Sure, you have your deadlines and you have your budgets, but a lot of things can happen. A lot of things can happen and they can throw you a curveball in the middle. So let's say that you were working a year in advance on a book that it's a horror book and you wanted to release on Halloween. And that's mm-hmm. because you think that all the pieces are just going to fall in place. So you would be working towards that goal. Horror book is going to be Halloween, but you have to be mindful that, okay, how can we merge two things together? So sometimes you can try to dissuade, I mean, your audience, I mean, to get them to gravitate a little bit more towards your content, depending what you're doing. I think that's with Halloween and horror, that's a good example that you can focus on. The rest of the stories, the rest of the content that you create is basically what are your usual suspects. So if people are into mm-hmm. sci-fi, action adventure, slice of life, comedy, so then you try to lean toward those type of books, and then hopefully you will create a high concept that would reel people in and get them really excited about your project.
Nice.
Yeah.
So do you think a lot about digital, not just now, but sort of in the coming years as the industry evolves?
Absolutely. That's a great question. I mean, it's a reality that things are moving digital. For some reason, comics, they still want the physical copy, and I understand why. I'm a collector myself, and there's no substitute to the real thing. But a lot of industries, like the movie industry, like the music industry, video game industry, they have been transitioning towards digital, and eventually it's bound to happen. Eventually that's going to be the future. I don't know when. But this morning I was actually reading a very interesting news on some marketing research that my editor-in-chief sent me. And he was showing me this article that was came out in Publishers Weekly, where actually graphic sales numbers are up almost by 20% from last year. We was like 9%, something like that. So still, I mean, so it's making, it's print is still in high demand. People are getting more serious about collecting their graphic novels, their books, their comics, and hooray for us. But you have to prepare. Yeah. But you have to prepare for the future, and you have to have your platform ready in the digital segment. So you need both.
Is there a secret formula If you can't give it to me, I totally understand. But is there a secret formula that makes Mad Cave stand out from the crowd? You know, just in general, something you do that makes your books exciting?
Just between the two of us. No, it's. I think that's something that we try to work really, really hard on is getting close to the fans. We have our slogan, which is mad variety, mad comics, mad fun. And really, we try to flesh out our comic books, our content. We don't usually just stick to one genre or to one theme, but we kind of branch out. So you might be able to say that Mad Cave has a comic for everyone, where they're depending on what you like or what you don't like or who you are, we might have something for you. So that on one aspect. And also Mad Cave, since its inception and we started the Steven Era books, we have been very, very passionate about something that we have every year, which is our talent search. And what we do is we basically just try to do this huge contest where writers and artists, they can actually send in samples inspired by the Mad Cave universe or artworks. And if they're selected, we either publish them on a mini series, or for example, the last year's Talent Search winners, they're going to be published in a horror anthology that we're going to be releasing in October of this year. So I think that those two things, I mean, we really try to pay attention with what people like. We try to branch out, and also we keep our eye closed on the community, on fans, and also give something back to all the support that we received over the years.
That's amazing. So what's your origin story? How did you become involved with comics?
I grew up in the late 80s, and I've always been fascinated by movies, by literature, by video games, by comic books. I'm just a fan of stories in general. So from a very young age, I knew that I wanted to be a storyteller. So
nice.
When the time was right, I basically had to make a decision. My wife gave me like the ultimate push, and the rest is history. We now have a publisher.
That's amazing. So you were there on the ground floor day one, just getting this thing started. So many people talk about like starting comics publishers. I suspect just, you know, anecdotally, that it's a lot harder than people think it is.
Yes. Yes. A lot of people underestimated, me included. Because as you're saying, Eva, it's really hard. It's a lot of work because there are so many moving parts. And so I think that up to this point, I could write a book of saying like all the things that you should not do when you start a publisher by Mike London. If all things fail.
Oh, I bet that would be fascinating.
Yeah, it's something that I think on constantly. I have multiple chapters now. So...
Did you have like a number one rule, the big number one mistake that you can think of that people shouldn't do when they start a comics publisher?
Yeah, definitely know the people that you're working with. Try to work with people that see the world like you do, because make sure that that's the case, because sometimes you're going to embark on long projects. I mean, this is, as my wife used to say, she tells me this all the time. Hey, listen, this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. So this is not something that you're just going to get out of the way quick. So if you don't have the right team or you don't have the right people on the bus, it's going to be a living hell. And I've had those in the past and they were not fun, and they would really suck out all the life and your passion completely from the project. So try to get people that see the world that you do, that they enjoy making comics, that no matter how hard it is, no matter how many mistakes there are, you keep pushing forward, put your best foot forward, and keep on making it. That's my number one rule. I mean, it's so difficult sometimes. I mean, just to find people that think like you, and it's okay if they don't. It's okay if they don't, because I think that in especially in a creative environment, you need people thinking differently. You need opposing forces in some way or the other. But at least that you know that when there's a setback of some sort, that you know that it's for the good of the project and not because you're filling a personal agenda or whatever. So
what's the do you have a thought on what the weirdest thing you've ever worked on is?
Well, that's a very interesting question. No, so far everything has been kept pretty much normal and decent. Although sometimes, I mean, you get your first script pages from somebody and you see this wild, bizarre tale. I mean, that is just like all the red flags are there. I mean, there's just like this guy just flew off the cuckoo's nest and he's bringing, I don't know, all his childhood fantasies, or he's bringing like all his dark thoughts into the page. And we're like, no, I'm sorry, but we're not gonna, we can't move ahead with this. You need to either tweak it or just let us know if you have something else in mind. But aside from that, I mean, all of them have been like kept pretty straightforward, I think, for the most part.
So how does Mad Cave approach inclusion and representation?
Like I was saying before, Eva, because we offer a lot of different genres and different themes, we try to be as inclusive as possible with all of our stories. And also with all the creators, and also with our a lot of our talent that we have working on these books. They come from different backgrounds, their beliefs, everything that they stand for. And that's really what I like. That's really what Mad Cave stands for, because that's the only way that you can actually make great comic books. You have to go out of a certain mold that had been place there for some reason for so many years, and you were stuck with the same stories all over and over again. And now if you include more people into the mix, what you're just going to get is it's an explosion of talent and great content and great approach, and seeing how everybody thinks and everybody thinks differently. So it's going to spark on the page, and that's really what we want. We don't want to keep just driving on one lane. We want many different options for many different people. And we're going to continue pushing that. I mean, there are no boundaries in Mad Cave. And if you take a look at all the creators that have worked for Mad Cave and on the upcoming projects, even for our YA publisher, which we're going to be launching it on October of this year, it's, I'm sorry, November of this year, it's a very diversified roster of talent.
It is. It's just crazy. I mean, the people who have worked on books for you guys, you know, you look at that list and you know, your jaw drops. It's impressive. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Eva.
So what do you think of trade paperbacks and collecting series or limited series in trade? I know there's like sort of division in the mm-hmm. fan community about it, but how do you see it?
Oh, I love trade paperbacks. Also because, I mean, you get to experience the either the first arc or the whole story at once. I mean, as much as I love my comics coming out monthly, which I'm still your Wednesday warrior, and I go to my comic book shop and pick up my books every Wednesday, and I collect them and I use and put them on my little plastic bags with my boards and on my long boxes, and I try to keep them pristine and mint. I'm a fan of the trade paperback. It's especially of the absolute editions when they are oversized or they are hardcover. Oh, yeah. Those are just amazing. I mean, and for example, when you've been a fan of works that have shined in the past, like you got your Hellboy or your Sandman or your Watchmen, and you have these beautiful absolute editions collected on your bookshelf. I mean, they just look so marvelous that it adds up to the whole experience. And I geek out with this stuff. So as much as I love my singles, as long as I love my singles, I have both. I mean, I'm a collector of both. What can I tell you, Eva?
That's fantastic. So do you have a favorite thing that you've ever worked on? Would you be allowed to tell me if you did?
Yeah, I think that, well, I also write a few books for Mad Cave. So I don't know. I think that my first published work was Battle Cats. So it's because it was my first, I think that it holds a very special place in my heart. And but every single thing that we make at Mad Cave and that it gets published and people interact with it and they comment and you receive the reviews, whether they're good or bad or whatever. I mean, I'm just humbled that we are able to do this and that we see that every project that we've been working for the past 5 years have seen the light today and that people react favorably to them. So I guess, I mean, I cannot, is that for me, for Mark London, it's a loaded question because it's you're asking me like, okay, you have three kids. Who do you love the most?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. Choose your babies.
Yeah, it's like, you would choose which one of your babies. Of course, you do have your favorites and you do have maybe a soft spot for one of them, but you have to take that to the grave. So
I'm lucky. I've only got one, so I can tell her she's my favorite.
Okay, good. I have three, and it becomes sometimes like, yeah, okay, daddy, who do you love the most? And I'm be like, I love you all equally. So it's like, yeah, but I hear you.
Kids are great. They just are. They're wonderful little creatures.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And I think creature is the right word for them sometimes, you know.
Absolutely. I call them a little gremlin sometimes. Don't feed them after 12.
Oh, yeah.
But okay, yeah, no. Especially sugar. No sugar after 12.
There you go. So do you think that the experience of running a comic book company and being a writer and just someone as actively involved in the process as you are, do you feel like that has... In a big way, changed the way that you read comics as a fan?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and it's almost impossible to differentiate your job from just being a fan, because now everything that you look at it with a certain lens. So you're trying to. Sometimes the enjoyment of the comic book that you're reading or the graphic novel or the one shot or whatever you're reading, sometimes, and I don't do this on purpose, but it takes like a backseat because you're trying to dissect the story, the panel work, the page turn, the colors, the art, the writing of the book. So sometimes it's hard. And sometimes I even catch myself doing that and be like, what are you doing? You're supposed to be enjoying this. This is supposed to be your sacred space now. Enjoy. Leave work aside for a second. But it's hard sometimes, Eva. I mean, it's when you do it in a day in, day out, those lines between enjoyment and still your work, they really get blurred. But I'm a fan first and foremost, and I like all the things that I'm seeing, and I keep on reading this stuff, devouring this stuff, because I just love it too much. I don't see myself doing
it's
anything else.
Man, greatest job in the world, that one. So do you still have time to read comics?
I do. I try by discipline. I try not to when I'm not writing, I have to be reading. whether it's a comic book or something else. Of course, I prefer comic books sometimes, especially because it's like, okay, there are a myriad of artists and writers out there doing wonderful things in comics right now. And I'm like, oh my God, this guy's so good. Oh my God, this girl is just amazing. Oh my God, they blew it out of the park. So it's like, I like what everybody's doing and what they're bringing to the table. So I need my comic books, man. I need them.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're essential. So do you have a favorite single issue story or title of all time?
Yes. For a very long time, I thought that it was Watchmen. But that's your typical story. A lot of people are just going to name that as their number one. But the more I think about it, one that really, really sticks with me, and I read it recently as well, it's this indie comic called The Crow by James O'Barr. It's a classic. Black and white, beautiful comic. It's got poetry in it. It's brutal. It's violent. It's sad. It's depressing. It's happy.
It's weird and beautiful.
Yeah. It just strikes so many different chords, Eva. And I have to say that that's my favorite comic book of all time.
Right on. Yeah, that would be my number two, right after Sandman. But yeah, no, that's a good choice. Yeah. So when was the last time a comic made you cry?
I kind of got a little bit tear-eyed with this Donny Cates book. It's called God Country. I don't know if you read it. And because it's about... It's about this warrior. It's about this character who kind of like has Alzheimer's, and then his kid, and his wife, and they're having a hard time like controlling him, and they have like bad memories of him when he was younger, but now the father becomes this warrior that has like a talking sword and everything, and he has to fight a god from outer space. So then when he becomes lucid, he starts having these conversations with his kid, and it just made me reminded me of my dad when I had these conversations with him deep down, because I lost my father a few years back. So I think that God Country kind of like struck a nerve there with a story. It's a beautiful story. If you haven't read it, I mean, I highly recommend it. It's great.
I have it on my list. I just haven't had time to get to it yet, unfortunately. But thank you.
I know that you're also super busy, so I understand how it is. But whenever you have the time, I mean, just try to check it out. It's
an interesting story. Thank you. So who is there anybody that stands out in your mind as either the most underrated or most inspiring comics creator in the industry?
I can think of a few, but for me, and especially at the time that I was reading comic books and I got obsessed with this stuff, I think it probably has to be Jim Lee from his X-Men days. I mean, he was just like a master. I mean, like he still is. I mean, he's Batman. His characters, I mean, are great. So well defined. He has very, very powerful art. I mean, a lot of people, they just like a little bit different styles. For me, Jim Lee is one of my top artists out there. But not only because he draws really, really well, but also because of what he did. I mean, he was a top artist at Marvel. Then he basically just left with a bunch of creators to start Image. He did his own projects. Then basically he came back, and now, well, as a lot of people know, well, he's basically just in charge of DC Comics now, up at the top of the food chain. So I don't know, his career, his journey as an artist, understanding the medium, loving the medium, and everything that he has giving the industry. I mean, it's great. So yeah, for me, the guy's up there. I could name others, but I mean, if you would have to ask me what is my number one, it would have to be Jim Lee.
Yeah. Yeah, Jim Lee is definitely on the inspirational side for sure.
For sure.
So what are you reading right now?
Right now, I'm reading Donny Cates' Thor, which is a blast. It's so fun. This morning, I picked the new Ninjak, and I was reading that just before our interview, which is also nice. Great. I'm rereading Sandman, since you mentioned that it was one of your favorite all-time favorite books. I mean, I'm rereading Sandman. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's also a wonderful series. So I still got a long way with that one because I mean, it's like 70 something issues. So still, I'm trying to like
pretty involved.
Absolutely. So little by little. Aside from that, Silver Coin by Image, which is kind of like your horror stories. Great. Haha, also by Image. Kind of very freaky from the creators of Ice Cream Man. Yeah, like horror. So I read anything that Colin Bunn is doing. He's Shadow Man at Valiant. He's got a new book at Aftershock. Yeah, basically those right now. I have more in my on my nightstand. Can't remember now where they are.
Well, Mark, it looks like we're heading up against the end of the show. But before we leave, it's time for the fun part. Are you ready?
I'm absolutely ready.
Sweet. Let's start with an easy one. So so what's your favorite food?
Sushi.
Nice. That's a good call.
You cannot go wrong with sushi.
Pineapple and pizza. Pineapple and pizza. Yay or nay?
Yay.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Would you say you're a cat person or a dog person?
I am a cat person. I have two cats. Nice. And I love them to death. I mean, they're so fun.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Which Ninja Turtle do you see yourself as?
That's a great question. It depends if I had my morning coffee or not, because sometimes I think I'm Leonardo and sometimes I feel there like I'm like Michelangelo. So it's like, I don't know. So,
Cowabunga.
Yes, Cowabunga, dude. So I would just, I don't know, between the two, depends on the hat that I'm wearing, Eva. Yeah, it has to be between Leonardo and Michelangelo.
That's good. You know, I've always had a hard time with that one myself. You know?
Yeah, that's a great question.
So are you the sort of person that would adopt a chicken and give it a full name?
Depends on the circumstance, but I've never shied away from a challenge. So hell yeah, why the hell? Why the hell not? Yeah, let's adopt a chicken and name it. Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet. So what inspires you?
Creating. I know that that's such a like a cliched answer, but really like creating stuff, building things, putting a comic book together, getting a creative team, whatever the strategy is, whatever you're heading, it requires some type of building and planning and strategizing. That's really what inspires me. That's really what moves me, getting from point A to point B. Try to hit your mark.
Where do you find joy?
My wife and my kids. They're really the weirdest things that I deal with on a daily basis, but they bring so much joy to my life that I wouldn't change that for the world.
All right, so you've been fighting with the Avengers all day. You've personally taken on Thanos. You're fighting him right now. You're losing. But fate smiles on you. And just before he's about to snap his fingers and wipe out half of all of reality, he falls dead of either a heart attack or a brain aneurysm or something along those lines, which puts you in immediate possession of the Infinity Gauntlet. Mm-hmm. You now have the ability to warp or change any aspect of reality that you want to.
Oof.
What's the first thing you do with it?
I would probably abolish hate. I would try to just like take that out of our society. I mean, so much anger, so much hate. Life is precious. Life is beautiful. Yeah, I know that is, I sound like a slogan, but hey, I'm an optimist. And if I could yank that of each and every single soul on this planet, I would probably do it. That would probably be my first to do with the Infinity Stones.
So what's next for Mark London?
What's next for Mark London? Keep on writing my series, which are Battle Cats, Honor and Curse, Knights of the Golden Sun, Woven Heart. I have some new projects in the back of my mind that I still haven't gotten the time to work on those, but that's something that I want to prioritize before the year is out. And for Mad Cave, keep on making as much inclusive comics as we can, fun, lots of quality, that we can engage with the fans, that people can relate to. And yeah, keep on creating with the best possible talent out
amazing.
There. Thank you.
I wanted to thank you for making the time to pop on our humble little podcast.
No, thank you, Eva. You have no idea how humbled I am that you have me. I had such a wonderful time. Questions were amazing. And
thank you.
And hopefully you now have a fan. I'm going to be listening to your podcast Yay. Religiously, and I'm going to promote the hell out of it. So you can count on that.
That is fabulous. Thank
yeah.
you.
No, thank you so much.
Where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter. That's basically where I roam the most, at Mark London MCS from Mad Cave Studio. So Mark London MCS. I'm also on Instagram and on LinkedIn. All of them are Mark London MCS. On our website, madcavestudios.com.
And now it's time to close the show. Imagine it. The lights beginning to come on in an empty theater. People starting to get up from their seats. The smell of popcorn crushed on the floor. And the thought runs through your head that Titular Characters is awesome and you want to support it. Fear not, my friends. There are tons of ways to do it. You can follow Eva at Eva is Adorable on Twitter. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, CastBox, or Podcast Addict. And if you're feeling super generous, you can leave some dough at buymeacoffee.com/EvaIsAdorable. There, you can contribute as little as a dollar. And every bit goes towards paying for production and hosting of this show. How cool is that? Titular Characters is a show about the things we love. It is produced and hosted by the adorable Eva Webb. Opening theme by Antonia Marquis. Closing theme by Mikey Flash of Speed Force Music. The dreamy announcer guy who reads the credits is Donnie Underwood. That's me. Join us next time for another death-defying adventure in cyberspace. See you then!